Pick an ace of six on the card, while I consider the sequence of salient events for a moment. Hawk could hear the wheels spinning as Congreve cogitated beneath his umbrella. He could never fathom how the world-famous criminalist could work his brain so fast and deep that no other man in the country could touch him. Whenever anyone inquired about the contents of his cranium, the man would lift his great head and said, "It's not my brain at all, it's the lower nerve center. That's the base of operations." Whatever that meant. Yes, I was right, the rotund detective said. Bogey, take a five, even though it was arguably a six or a seven. I will certainly not take a five. I'm not about to let you... Hold on a tick, my mobile's humming. You can't take a call on the course, Alex. There's a loo up on the top of that hill. Go up there before you get us thrown off this hallowed ground. Hawk ascended the hill. What took you so long? I'm bloody freezing, Ambrose said when Hawk came trudging back down through knee-deep snow. The telephone call, you mean? Sir David calling from the office on the secure line. You won't like it one bit. Try me. Another last-minute summons from my esteemed employer at MI6. Of course, while we're out enjoying a fine Saturday morning on the links, he's helming the great ship of state from his desk by the Thames, hell-bent on making the rest of us poor serfs feel guilty. I don't feel guilty in the slightest, and I would opine that the Chief of British Secret Services takes great delight in toying with you, Alex, playing you like his star fiddle. Not even remotely true. What's the old man on about this time? Something about a murder in Zurich. Impacts state security, that's all. Very hush-hush about the whole affair, as befits his station. Wants us, yes, you too, to meet him for cocktails in London at his club Boodles at five. Fine. Wonderful. Why in God's name do I have to come? He's your boss, not mine, thank heavens. I've other things to do, frankly. My wife expects you to be home at two, to help her can peaches. Sad, no? Sir David said he might be well in need of that monumental brain, those legendary detective skills, before whatever nasty business that awaits us is over. What it's really about, he neglected to say. What time is it? Better get on the road. You know, he abhors tardiness. They headed for the car park and Alex's steel-gray 1957 Bentley Continental, a mammoth beast he called the locomotive. If we're late, Congreve said. Just use that lethal smile of yours to charm the birds out of his trees. Tried it many times, as birds have all flown the coop. Lord Hawk had charm to spare. He stood well north of 6 feet, had a full head of unruly black hair and crystalline blue eyes that some London gossip queen had once referred to in print as pools of frozen Arctic rain. People of every stripe and gender found him attractive. As was often said of him, men wanted to stand him a drink, while women much preferred him horizontal. For a man in his mid-30s, he was in splendid shape. His nearby country estate, 5 miles from the Sunningdale Links, was called Hawksmoor. He had a stable of race cars, a boxing ring where he sparred, a shooting range where he shot, and a hall where he fenced. He swam 6 miles in open ocean whenever he got the chance and did laps in the indoor pool at home when he did not. But it was his easygoing manner, matched with fierce determination, a keen moral sense, and courage under fire that made him the most valued and successful counter-terrorist officer in the entire British Secret Service. Many had, over the years, underestimated Alex Hawk, this gentleman spy, at their peril, and many had paid full measure for that mistake. He was, when all was said and done, a dashing, an aristocratic English nobleman of noble principles who could kill you using only one of his bare hands. Chapter 5. There you are, Sir David, Hawk said, feigning overwhelming joy at the sight of the man he'd worked for. A stern-looking gentleman in a blue worsted suit who awaited them on a curving red leather banquette. He was in his usual spot, nursing a light whiskey soda in a quiet corner of the men's grill at London's gentlemen's club in St. James, known as Boodles.
Hello. You look bloody awful, C said to Hawk,
inspecting them up and down. We try. You should never again be seen in public wearing those tartan golfing slacks again. Tartan! Painful. Reflects badly upon me and the entire Secret Service. With all due respect, I intended to spend the day at the golf course, not in a London gentleman's club, sir. True Love waved the excuse away. Time is wasting, he said. Sit down, both of you. Have a drink. You both look like you could use one. A pair of drowned rats soaked to the skin. Rats? Congreve whispered out of the corner of his mouth. Certain he'd misunderstood the word. What can I offer you, Inspector Congreve? I caught you looking rather longingly at the barman over there. Oh, was I really? Name your poison, Chief Inspector. McAllen's single malt, if you have it, if not Durs, please. Ambrose smiled. Never varies, you know. Believe me, I speak from vast experience. And for you, Alex, rum, please. Tot of Gosling's Black Seal, if you don't mind, the 151 proof. Sir David repeated their request to the club steward and added a glass of Margaux for himself. When the drinks were in hand, he raised his glass and said, Schlantavar, Gaelic toast meaning get it to the hole. Schlantavar, his guests said, raising their glasses and sipping. C crossed his legs and said, Despite your appalling taste in haberdashery, you are looking fit, Alex. 2 weeks at your tea kettle cottage in Bermuda seems to have agreed with you. Thank you, sir, but despite my much younger age and condition, I still can't beat this wily sportsman over here at a game of golf. True Love chuckled and gazed up at the grand painting of Admiral Lord Nelson's victory at Trafalgar. Now, Alex, let me get to the reason I called you both down to London on a Saturday. There's been a bizarre murder in Zurich, according to our chief of station there, a crime that is of great interest not only to MI6, as you'll soon understand, but to the Crown as well. Spent much time in Switzerland, have you? Hawk thought about it. Well, let me see. Went to school there briefly, Le Rossi, before transferring to Dartmouth Naval College, sir. Later on, the odd business trips to Zurich, ski holidays in St. Moritz or Gstaad, that sort of thing. Done a bit of mountain climbing there in my younger days, as you may remember. The tragedy under Noddle was the beginning of the end of all that foolishness. Yes, tragic events, Alex, tragic. But you did have another go, correct? One more? You almost conquered that mountain a few years ago, I recall. That's quite a conquest for a semi-professional climber coming out of retirement. Well, thank you, sir. I won't claim it wasn't a bit daunting in the doing. A bit creaky for that sort of thing now. Oh, and I fell. Ambrose, how about you? Mountain climbing, me. Good Lord, no. He doesn't even ski, Hawk put in, quite unnecessarily. I only refer to Switzerland, Chief Inspector. Spend much time there. Yes, good bit, actually. The usual thing, mostly business in Zurich, but in Geneva and Bern as well. You know the drill, sir, intricate financial cases involving British clients and old Swiss banks, neither of whom want their names in the papers. Private family matters, the odd murder. Investigated a crime involving a lesser-known British royal recently, Lord Emsworth of Blandings Castle, one of Her Majesty's lesser nephews. A kidnapping, just last year. A horse, as a matter of fact, yes. Horse, Trulev said. Extraordinary. Long story, sir. Well, at least you've both been there enough to know your way around. Good contacts, I would say. Knowledge of the history and customs and so on. Going to Switzerland, I take it? Congreve said. You are indeed. Something has come up. Hawk and Ambrose eyed each other across the table. That phrase, something has come up, was C-speak for the poop has hit the poop deck again. Well, pray tell, Sir David, Congreve said. What exactly has come up? Well, it won't come to any surprise for you to learn that the case involves financial misdeeds, as well as a grisly murder. The large private bank accounts of a select group in the House of Lords have recently been subjected to very sophisticated hacking attacks. There were substantial losses prior to the discovery of the incursion, not to mention some losses in a number of accounts belonging to Her Royal Highness, the Queen herself. Queen? Yes, the Queen. One of Her Majesty's many charitable accounts in Zurich has been systematically looted over the last 6 months into near non-existence. That discovery triggered the investigation, and that, we think, led to the murder of a very prominent Swiss banker. And that, gentlemen, is why I asked you here. I hesitate to add that one of the British accounts burgled was held by you, Alex. Your account with Credit Suisse was recently attacked. However, in the main, your cybersecurity bulwarks held fast, Lord Hawk.
Attacks on my accounts, really? Hard to believe. I've not heard a word about it from my bankers there.
Nor will you, except from me. The ongoing criminal investigations are taking place under a blanket of total security, so as not to alert the hackers. As of yet, our MI6 lads in Zurich have been unable to trace these attempts back to the primary source. But MI6 Cyber Warfare here in London has been able to verify the origin of one of these attacks as being China, and more recently, our Russian friends.
Oh, Christ, Hawk said. Here we go again. I've gotten to the point with Putin and the Russians that I much prefer the Chinese.
I believe we all have, Alex. Behold Putin unchained. Vlad the Impaler. How did you learn of all this financial skullduggery, sir?
Congreve asked.
Sheer luck. One of our Zurich station's MI6 techies had his laptop freeze up while looking at some strange goings-on. Very strange indeed. He was simply running a cursory check on the Swiss government's cyber tech division's UK accounts monitoring that very morning when something very disturbing popped up. That was a week ago. Our man had somehow tapped into a peek inside the books of all the major Swiss banks with British accounts. He suddenly saw things he had never seen before. Wild swings and overnight balances. He happened on it while at home, rebuilding his MacBook Air, if you can imagine. Immediately got on our MI6 station chief in Zurich to alert him to what was going on, and thus I received the call. Schultz, was it? Yes. Fritz Schultz, called Blinky by many of his MI6 colleagues. Something or other to do with his eyes. He called me late last night. His message was that a prominent banker named Leo Herman had been found dead by a Swiss army alpinist near the base of the mountain just south of Zurich. Herman handled Her Majesty's private accounts at Credit Suisse. Top man. We need to run this thing to ground immediately, lest it go any farther, and shut down whoever was behind not only the hacking, but this very odd murder as well.
Hawk, now fully engaged in the conversation, leaned forward and stared at C. Chapter 6. I know Blinky quite well, mostly from alpine climbing together. Do you think this fellow Herman was involved with the hacking attacks on Her Majesty? Or that he was killed because he was getting close to unmasking the foreign culprits?
I have no idea. You both understand that Great Britain itself keeps most of its vast gold reserves throughout Switzerland. But frankly, Blinky Schultz is far more worried about Her Royal Highness's business than yours, my dear boy. Your name and Hawk Industries just happened to pop up in the mix of attempted hacking.
It's rather surprising, sir. In the world's largest money pond, I'm a very small fish.
And so I assume this is where Hawk and I enter the picture?
Congreve said, leaning forward. You could almost hear the eager panting as Scotland Yard's famous old dog gnawed at a rather large new bone clenched between his teeth.
Precisely, Chief Inspector. And I'm hardly a cyber warfare sleuth, with all due respect, sir.
Ambrose replied.
Don't even know how to tweet.
Tweet? What the hell is that? C said.
Oh, it's some kind of app or other. I have no idea, Sir David.
An app? What on earth is this man talking about, Alex?
Couldn't really say so, sir. You're a fine criminalist, Ambrose. No one expects you to tweet or climb anything. But you, Alex, are entirely another kettle of fish. You possess skills that may prove vital to the mission, hitherto unused in the line of duty, I might add.
Such as, sir?
Mountain climbing, to be exact. I took a look around at all the available resources in your section, all the CVs, you say. Looking at the various hobbies officers of my own C-section enjoy. No luck at all, until I thought of you. You're simply the only man who meets professional-grade qualifications. At any rate,
That's why I chose the two of you, the brain and the brawn, as it were. Congreve put his fist to his mouth and coughed discreetly.
I wouldn't mind a bit of climbing, a gentle hill or a slope, perhaps.
No. None of the brawny bits for you, Chief Inspector. It's that galactic-sized brain of yours that wants exercise now. You'll find these two tangled mysteries worthy of your talents, I assure you. Ever heard of a man called the Sorcerer, either of you?
No, I haven't,
Ambrose said.
A bit of a mystery, as I say. Very few people have ever laid eyes on him in recent years. And if they did, most all are dead now. Old age, or whatever. When he disappeared, he was the most powerful man in Swiss finance. He ruled the roost. Nothing happened or didn't happen in the great Swiss financial institutions that did not have his blessing or fingerprints on it. You'll both hear a lot more about him from your friend Blinky. Yes, Alex. It's not often I find myself looking into crimes that actually involve both the Queen and me personally, or have anything to do with my own business bank accounts. I'll get to all that in due time. Now, do either of you know anything about the real Switzerland? And by that I mean the inner workings of the country itself, the military history, for example.
Hawk looked over at Ambrose and said, No, not really.
We're all ears, Sir David, Congreve said, with all the eagerness of a new puppy. Please, sally forth. I don't want to bore you with a lecture.
We're never bored. Hawk said brightly, like an overly excited honors student who is Cambridge Don.
The old man got his pipe lit and said, Here you have a tiny nation that has not fought a war in over 700 years, and yet they are fiercely determined to know how to fight so as not to have to.
Jolly good. Hawk smiled. Ambrose guffawed and added, Marvelous, which pleased the host no end.
Switzerland is 2 times the size of the state of New Jersey, which has by far the greater population. Yet, there are nearly 1 million men in the Swiss army. It's a civilian army, a trained and practiced militia ready to mobilize instantly. Every citizen serves for 30 years, but all of them, 1 million of them, mind, are ready to grab their rifles and be present at mobilization points and battle stations all over the country. Within 24 hours.
You've got to be joking, Hawk exclaimed, full of wonder.
No, not even slightly. Most of these citizen troops specialize in combat operations that occur at 12,000 feet and skyward and... I beg your pardon, Sir David, but this is to be a military operation as well?
Congreve asked.
Not yet, at any rate, but we must be prepared for the path to lead us in that direction. I cannot say more, but our man Blinky is going to introduce you to someone named Baron Wolfgang von Stutka, or Wolfie, as he likes to be called. Comes from a very long line of aristocratic warriors. Now a highly respected divisionnaire in the Swiss army. Captain, basically. Many call him Switzerland's guardian angel. He is the soul of bravery and honesty, and a man revered by most of the population, especially the women.
I look forward to meeting this saint in human form, Hawk said. Excitement palpable in his voice.
And finding your murderer for you, sir.
Well, I'll second that, Sir David,
Ambrose said.
Good. Time to do one's duty,
Hawk said, raising his eyes to the magnificent picture of his great hero, Admiral Lord Nelson, as he lay dying on the bloody deck of his flagship Victory. The last words he'd spoken were, I thank God that I have done my duty.
Chapter 7 All aboard!
Shouted the squat little Eurostar porter at London's busiest St. Pancras station. Typical London weather, raining buckets and pea-soup fog. Hawk and Congreve, each carrying their own luggage, made their way through the hubbub of the crowded platform toward the nearest first-class carriage. Hawk entered the car first. He dropped his leather carry-all on the floor of the freezing vestibule and turned around to unburden Congreve of his Louis Vuitton hard slider. The chief inspector was coming up the steps, huffing and puffing as Hawk snatched his suitcase away. Congreve's cheeks had turned bright apple red in the chilly air of the terminal.
You're a godsend, Alex, he croaked.
Did you really need to bring this bloody thing? The bag alone must weigh over 40 pounds. Are you mad? Ever heard of a backpack?
Ambrose put one hand against the cold steel bulkhead and paused to catch his breath. Fishing for his handkerchief, he began to mop his brow, said, Backpack, you say?
No, actually, I've not. What the devil are they?
Well, they're what normal people carry things in.
I did not pack this lovely antique Vuitton case. My wife, who is a woman barely acquainted with normalcy, did.
Far be it from Hawk to reply to that one. Lady Mars was one of his closest friends, and she had long aided him in his futile quest to keep Congreve out of as much trouble as they could manage. Despite the famous detective's somewhat sedentary lifestyle, he embraced Winston Churchill's famous claim that there is nothing so exhilarating as to be shot at without effect. Safe to say that Ambrose himself had dodged more than his fair share of bullets during his own legendary career at Scotland Yard. The number of bullets fired at him had decreased somewhat when he joined Lord Hawke and his notoriously dangerous lifestyle, but they were still quite numerous. It was much warmer in the cabin. The two men made their way up the hectic aisle and located their seats. Collapsing into them, they each pulled out a copy of the day's Times. A few minutes later, the train chugged slowly out of St. Pancras Station, heading south out of London, bound for Paris and the Gare du Nord, and thence to Zurich Hauptbahnhof, the central rail station near the beautiful Zürichsee, the banana-shaped blue lake that added so much to the life of the city.
"Know much about Switzerland?"
Ambrose said to Hawk as they crossed the Swiss border some hours later. Hawk grinned and nodded his head. Congreve often imitated Sir David's brusque manner, his whiskey-seasoned admiral's bark. Hawk laughed.
"Could you believe that?" Hawk said. Old boy had clearly just been hard at his Google all morning long, just wanted to show off.
They both chuckled and then picked up the books they'd carried along for the train ride. Congreve's was Conan Doyle's Hound of the Baskervilles, of course. He proudly announced that he was reading it for the 20th time. He rarely strayed from the tales of his life's epic hero, the incandescent master detective Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Hawk was thumbing through The Deep Blue Goodbye, another tale in a brilliant series about his beloved sunburned and sandblasted knight-errant Travis McGee, slip F-18, by Yamar Marina, Fort Lauderdale. What a life. Living on a houseboat, a bachelor in paradise, who had his pick of every bikini tan on the beach, and Ambrose interrupted his reverie.
You said earlier that you'd climbed Nadel once before, White Death, I believe you called it.
Yes, rather odd, isn't it? The old man wants me to climb the one mountain in all of Switzerland that I've never conquered. I still have dreams about that wicked bitch all the time.
Never heard you speak much about that experience. Tell me more.
And I'm terrified of that hill, frankly. It's just rock, snow, and ice, like all the rest, but this bitch seems almost like she wants to kill you. Like you're not anywhere near good enough for her.
Is that bad?
Much worse. There's a reason why so many climbers meet death up there. It's insane to even try to cheat it.
That's why they come for it. A sheer vertical face they call the murder wall, smooth as glass. Survive that and you've got a shot at reaching the summit, which is a bloody rock spike that forgives nothing. It's like a giant needle scratching at the top of the world.
Hence the name Der Nadel? The needle?
Yes.
Vertical faces, treacherous ice fields swept by appalling winds and ice storms, barely anything to hold on to or even stick your axe into.
Bloody hell thing that monster is, I'll tell you that. Why did you do it?
Reach the summit, you mean? Oh, I didn't. I very nearly fell to my death from the north face. Chaps had to come up, bring me down. One of them continued on, reaching the summit, looking for another climber who had gone missing.
And you're actually willing to have another go after that nightmare? Isn't that, as you said, insanity?
Well, more than willing, Ambrose, determined.
Ah, if at first you don't succeed, why on earth would you even dare to
Because my grandfather's up there.
There was a silence then between the two of them.
Hawk abruptly picked up his old Travis McGee paperback again and pretended to read for a while. And then he put it down and stared out his window for a very long time as they began a long climb up into the sun-struck white-tipped Alps. He finally slept a bit, with his chin on his chest. Chapter 8. Zurich.
You can wake up now, Alex. We've arrived in heaven.
What?
Switzerland. You heard me. Time to go check into the hotel and have a dram of Scottish elixir before I expire.
They found a cab and soon were headed up a wide boulevard that hugged the lakefront. Their hotel was a treasure, called the Bower du Lac. It occupied a prime bit of real estate directly overlooking Lake Zurich, with views of the snow-covered southern Alps that stretched all the way to Italy. Having both showered and changed into fresh shirts, slacks and jackets, they met in the hotel bar a little before 7. Hawk arrived first and ordered his favorite Bermuda rum, Gosling's Black Seal.
"Now you're right,"
Ambrose said upon arrival, taking a stool adjacent to Hawk. He looked around the paneled room.
"This is a rather spectacular old inn. Exquisite antique furnishings and art, even in my little room. Very belle epoque, but with a touch of the modern."
"Very what? Very belle something or other?"
"It's French.
I know what bloody language it is. What does it mean?"
"Oh, never mind. Don't get so cranky."
Hawk took another sip of his cocktail and said, "Feel like I'm stepping back in time a century or so every time I stay here. Glad you like it. What are you having?" Congreve summoned the barman and ordered a tumbler of the Macallan 18, his favorite single malt whiskey. He said,
"I was very distressed to hear about your experiences with that cursed mountain, Alex, the White Death. Gives me a shudder just to say it out loud.
Well, let's just say it's been unkind to my family. But as I said, if I can find a bit of time after we're tidied up all the loose ends over here, I fully intend to give that bloody hill another run for its money." Ambrose caught a glimpse of Alex's expression and decided not to reply to that.
"But tell me about this chap of yours here in Zurich," Congreve said, glancing at his watch. "Herr Schultz should be arriving at any moment. What's the scoop on this fellow, Alex?"
"Our Zurich station chief for the last decade or so, as you already know, Fritz Schultz is an interesting study. Born in Germany, moved to Zurich later in life, promoted to captain in the German Navy at a very young age, decorated more than once. C recruited him to join MI6 in the late 90s. Blinky has proved himself invaluable in a town that is always chock full of scoundrels and spies. I've dealt with him many times and found him to be scrupulously honest, brave as an oak, and built like a fireplug. Ah, here he comes now. Hello, Blinky, it's Hawk, over here." The new arrival lit up at the sight of his old friend and hurried toward Hawk with his arms spread wide. He had a very brisk manner and was wearing an old seaman's cap upon his head.
"Okay, how grand to see you again."
Herr Schultz embraced Hawk, patting him warmly on the back, then took the newly vacated stool beside his friend. Congreve, with his ex-London copper's knack for memorizing faces on sight, thought Herr Schultz looked somewhat as Hawk had described, but upon closer inspection, Ambrose found the fellow's face to be made up of points and angles and a prominent bill-like nose, which gave him the look of a woodpecker in a captain's hat. All of this combined with some neurological quirk that caused him to blink rapidly and incessantly. It was this tic, obviously, that had earned him his ship's nickname of Blinky. He was a right wise and jolly old elf, with those busy blue eyes and a shock of white hair on his head, and he was built like a bank vault.
"And you as well, Blinky," Hawk was saying. "Please say hello to my partner in crime, former Chief Inspector of Scotland Yard, Ambrose Congreve."
"Pleasure," Congreve said, extending his hand. "Pleasure is all mine, sir,"
Blinky replied. The three men exchanged more pleasantries and happy chit-chat before settling down to the business at hand. Hawk said, "So, Blinky, let's get down to cases. Could you please give us a quick update? Sir David only provided us with the bare bones of this astounding case."
The man smiled, withdrew his briar pipe from inside his jacket, and got it going before he replied.
Have either of you heard of a man living here in Zurich named Baron Wolfgang von Stuttgart?
Stuttgart, like the Nazi dive bomber.
You will. He is suddenly playing a significant role in this money mystery of ours. One of the most powerful and popular financial men in town. Highly respected Swiss Army officer as well.
I have a feeling we're going to be hearing a lot more about him,
Congreve said.
Chapter 9.
Baron von Stuttgart, Blinky said, puffing away on his pipe like a steam locomotive, his eyes rapidly fluttering, is a divisionaire in the Swiss Army. Friends call him Wolfie. I do. A captain, basically, when he's called to active duty in the mountain passes. He's the one man who might be able to help us get to the bottom of this, not only help to unravel this financial sneak hack attack, but to find those responsible for it, takes them off the board. So far so good, right? Then the game changer happened. He rang me up a week or so ago and said one of his grenadiers, Lieutenant Hartz, did a very odd thing while on a search and rescue duty that morning. He took a near-fatal fall, and then he found a decapitated head on the snowy ledge that had broken his fall. Saved his life.
A what?
Congreve exclaimed. A head. Hartz thought it was just a head lying frozen under snow. That's what it looked like, anyway. He took a squad of grenadiers back up to the sites the next morning. They dug away all the ice beneath the head for over an hour, and voila, le corpse, dressed quite oddly. Baron von Stuttgart has a strong feeling that, based on its appearance, that body is related to our mystery.
How? Hawk asked.
And Wolfie intends to investigate it. There were certain things about the corpse that... Never mind, I will let him tell you about it. He's not saying anything for public consumption, but privately he thinks that he may have well found the Batcave.
Batcave? Congreve said.
Batcave, yes. I'm sure Sir David mentioned someone known as the Sorcerer when he briefed you.
Congreve said he did. Very mysterious chap, apparently. Disappeared a decade or more ago.
Wolfie believes the Sorcerer may be involved in this computer crime wave, and that the corpse may lead us to the Sorcerer's lair, where he's been hiding all these years.
Batman's our new villain. How marvelous, Congreve said, smiling amiably at Blinky.
Batman? No, not exactly. No cave, no Robin, no Batmobile, but a cave? Maybe, maybe not. It's something we must talk about after you both know more about the case, yes?
Blinky was indeed a delight, Congreve thought. He had an infectious smile, lightning-quick mind, and a very discreet approach to things. He wore a lovely Austrian jacket, gray wool, with forest-green trim and reindeer antler buttons. Blinky seemed to epitomize all of Congreve's most cherished romantic notions about the eccentric Swiss character come down from the mountains. And he wanted that gray wool jacket.
Blinky said, "Let me tell you a little about Wolfie, Chief Inspector. Baron Wolfgang von Stuttgart, patriarch of one of our country's wealthiest, oldest, and most noble families, a citizen soldier and a businessman. That is our Baron. No matter where this trail leads us, Wolfie will be a vital asset to us, as you will soon discover."
Sir David told us only about von Stuttgart's sense of duty and sterling reputation for bravery, Hawk said. Now tell us the truth about this fellow who's too good to be true.
Blinky smiled.
Of course. We grew up together, and my children and Herr Baron's children are still great friends. Well, where to start?
It's a little-known fact that Europe's 12 ruling families remain deeply competitive about who has the swankiest palaces, the biggest yacht, the shiniest diamonds, and the biggest bank balances. It's always been an expensive business being a royal. Wars to fight, castles to build, daughters to marry off, pageants to perform, and all that. And there is our poor Wolfie, poverty-stricken by the standards of the original 12 families,
He keeps the von Stutke family dynasty going by selling off land and art. Also invested in a wildly successful business in Texas that develops not oil fields, but hybrid rice for developing nations. He has devoted his life to charitable work, much like your friend Prince Charles, Alex. His exalted people are expected to look shiny and regal and good on a postcard, but you'll never see a picture of Wolfie published anywhere. He's too modest, too humble. No Rolls in his garage. Drives around Zurich in old blue Lexus. I find this chap rather likable already, Hawk said.
Well, I suspect you two will get along, Alex. Wolfie was recently asked by a newspaper reporter about his legendary humility. His answer, I would rather not talk about humility, as to do so would not be humble. That's Wolfie in a nutshell. So, when do we finally meet the saint in human form? Said Hawk. A modest man himself, he hated exorbitant praise on anyone. Tomorrow morning. He's on maneuvers for this 10th Mountain Division, high up in the mountain, south of Lucerne, but he knows you are both coming to talk. I'll provide you with transportation, of course. You'll be driving down here at first light, a little under an hour, and then military transport to his classified location high in the Southern Alps. Hope you don't mind driving in a 50-year-old Mercedes 200 with studded tires for the first leg of our journey. Heavy snow tomorrow. Anything else? If not, I'll have a schnapps, and then on to lovely fondue.
Splendid, Ambrose said. I could eat a horse.
Well, we have that too, Chief Inspector. A great delicacy here at the Hotel Bower de Locke.
Hawk laughed out loud. You'll get to see the famous Eiger tomorrow, you know. The one they filmed that spy movie about Clint Eastwood, I think, yes.
I've seen that mountain from a distance, but never climbed it, Hawk said.
Looked down on the Eiger from near the summit of Dunadel.
Quite a spectacular sight.
Quite the view from up there, Alex, Pinky said.
No, really. I was hanging upside down by my heels at the time.
Chapter 10 The two Englishmen got their first glimpse of Baron von Stutka the next morning as he climbed down from his command vehicle. It was a clear and frosty morning in mid-December, and a giant, bright red snowcat with brilliant white Swiss crosses on the doors was gleaming against the mountains newly frosted with snow. The sun was shining, almost blinding at this altitude, and Hawk had to use his binoculars to see their host. He strode quickly down the length of a long white swath in the snow, one the snowcat had just carved on the slope. It was near a wide crevasse on the snow-packed Eiger, 6,000 feet above the lake below. Hawk raised his binoculars to his eyes and watched von Stutka's descent down the mountain. On the Baron's shoulders and nestled in the fleece of his Finnish hat were a pair of stars. There was a Swiss cross in the center of each star. The divisionaire was tall and trim, with wavy dark hair, a narrow suntanned face, and a manner about him that was quietly convincing. It occurred to Hawk that Gregory Peck, in his military film roles, had resembled the Baron, who, in turn, actually resembled General Douglas MacArthur. Blinky, his apple-red cheeks wrapped in a fur-trimmed parka, said, "The Baron must go to remote locations to see his men in action. In Switzerland, there are no Fort Braggs, no Fort Knoxes, like the U.S. Army has, you see, no vast terrains set aside for explosive games. If the 10th is using live ammunition like today, they must climb to the higher elevations to shoot and blow things up. This company of grenadiers looks upon themselves the way the United States Marines or your SAS men see themselves, a breed apart. Only these men specialize in combat that takes place at altitudes of 6,000 feet in skyward."
Most impressive, Blinky, Hawk said,
and he honestly was impressed. "These 10th Mountain Division troops are all technical climbers, extreme skiers, demolition experts, and crack shots. They sleep on granite mattresses and eat chocolate-covered nails. Some of them, like Wolfie, are wealthy bankers or CEOs of major Swiss corporations.
The older man you spoke to when we first arrived, carrying the heavy machine gun, is the chairman of Nestle. Others are chauffeurs, dental technicians, civil engineers, and alpine guides. One young lieutenant up here works for IBM in Armonk, New York. Today the grenadiers have uncovered an enemy command post and are moving up toward it under the covering live fire of Russian automatic weapons, simulating what might be a reality one day. You see them up there, yeah?
We do, Congreve said, the binocs glued to his eyes.
Crawling through the snow under bullets, they will soon reach the lower wall of the Russian command post, a dotted line in their mines, and rig it with Semtex explosive charges. You'll soon see the explosion. Chunks of broken rock will rise out of the snow and fly in all directions, right over the heads of our warriors. Ah, here he is. Guten Morgen, Herr Bern.
We made it.
Wolfie laughed and embraced Schultz, delighted to see his childhood friend again.
So you have. So you have. And these are your two colleagues just arrived from London. Willkommen, both of you. I am Baron von Stuttgart. A great pleasure to meet you.
I'm Alex Hawk, Baron. Hawk said, extending his bare hand. Blinky told me I may call you Wolfie.
Please do, Lord Hawk. Everyone does.
And you are Chief Inspector Congreve. Yes, how do you do? I've been looking at you at Wikipedia recently. You're quite famous, you know, Chief Inspector. A highly respected criminalist, well known. In the newspapers, there's the demon of deduction, the modern Sherlock Holmes. I'm very honored to meet you, sir. We will need a man of your billions to solve this mystery, I assure you. Congreve, thrilled beyond measure at the Holmes compliment, shook the Baron's hand and said,
"Well, I wouldn't go that far, Wolfie. I've had a few successes, but nothing even remotely to compare with my hero, the incandescent Holmes. But what a brilliant morning up here. Blinky here was just giving us a briefing on what your 10th Mountain Division grenadiers are doing up there on the mountain. Fascinating.
Well, it's what we do, isn't it? Mountain warfare. You see what's happening up there right now? They're about to take out a Russian command post, I believe, Hawk said, holding a pair of Zeiss binoculars to his eyes. Live fire, isn't it? And, Wolfie, please just call me Alex. Don't use the title. Never have.
Quite right. Alex it is. Well, where are we now in our little war story? Ah, yes. Do you see those heavy boulders over there? On the far side of the crevasse just gone in shadow? My men are crawling through chest-high snow toward them. Any idea what they might be? Alex?
Enemy helicopters that have just landed?
Wolfie smiled. Well, you've either got a very vivid imagination or you've played these games yourself, Alex. Good for you.
Yeah. A little of both, I guess. Congreve, struggling to get his pipe lit in the wind, said,
Now what happens, Wolfie? I must say that this is jolly good fun for me. Never having been a military man, I've never seen this sort of live fire thing done before.
Delighted to have you. It was all Blinky's idea. Knew I was up here on maneuvers and said as long as he was bringing you both up here for lunch, why not come up a little earlier, get a peek at what makes the Swiss Army tick?
Clock? Ambrose said, stifling a laugh.
Quite a good one, Wolfie said, and then added, So, Blinky, as you know, my command trailer is up there in that copse of evergreens. Do you think our guests would enjoy a bit of warmth in getting an overview of the operation from up there?
Blinky Schultz, stamping his ancient leather boots against the cold, said,
Good idea, Wolfie. I believe you're having lunch served up there in an hour. Why not?
To the snow cat, then,
von Stuttgart said, marching back up the slope and signaling them to follow in his tracks. Blinky stopped along Alex on the climb to the red vehicle. He said,
I hope this suits you, Alex. Knowing how we wage war at the top of the world might just come in handy one day.
Are you kidding? I'm fascinated with Wolfie's tutorial. We can talk about the sorcerer tonight, after all. As you can see, my country is prepared for an invasion at some point in the future.
Russians? Hawk asked. I don't see it.
Putin isn't that crazy.
Blinky said.
Let's talk about that tonight over dinner at de Kronenhall as well, shall we? The Russians may be involved in this financial chicanery, but military issues, that's an entirely different matter.
Let's go up. Von Stuttgart said. Bear with me.
Baron von Stuttke said, clearly grateful for the cozy warmth inside his command trailer. Hawk, Congreve, and Herr Schultz, plus a pair of uniformed military observers with powerful binoculars, were all seated in a row of chairs facing a very large window. They were watching the ballet of battle as it played out high up on the mountainside. Hawk was watching the live fire exercise up above with laser-like focus. Even Ambrose was beginning to appreciate the gift of knowledge that Wolfie was giving them. He had been explaining the nuances and intricacies of high mountain warfare, while the four of them had been sipping hot cocoa and eating pastries from Sprugli, the most famous café in Zurich. It was, Congreve mused, a lovely way to spend a morning. Von Stuka stood up to stretch his back and said, "Those huge boulders we arranged over there, as you have correctly assumed, Alex, represent enemy helicopters that have just landed. Remember that for 700 years, Swiss soldiers have been the masters of these mountain passes." Sorry, did you say that you arranged those boulders? Sure. Indistinguishable from real granite, but they weigh only a tenth of the real thing. Brilliant invention created by scientists at the Ministry of Defense, made of some synthetic rock called Granite 2. Comes in handy in a lot of situations, good for camouflaging things up in the mountain, for example. "Yeah, extraordinary," Ambrose said. Yes. Ours was a land where the invaders were at extreme disadvantage. We knew the mountain terrain down to the square inch, every rock and stream. They hadn't a clue. Centuries ago, we would even win battles with falling rocks, rolled them down the mountain and crushed the invaders far below. And then the helicopters were invented. Changed everything, one would assume, Ambrose said, polishing off a lemon tart. Yes, the modern Swiss army has the flying horses, as we call them, to contend with. We have substituted surface-to-air missiles for loose rocks. Should a swarm of enemy choppers come sweeping through that pass someday, we will be ready, and at that moment, there came a deafening roar, one that echoed down the towering canyons of stone. Not an avalanche, the noise was loud to the point of pain. The enemy communications outpost had just been obliterated in an epic explosion. Giant chunks of granite had been blown upward, and they now came tumbling down from the sky. As Alex and his friends watched, the 10th Mountain Division climbed even higher toward their next objective, ducking and dodging the falling chunks of granite. Shots rang out then, echoing down the canyons of stone. Chapter 11. It was snowing heavily that evening. Outside the hotel, nearly invisible, snow-laden trolleys trundled along on the wide Bahnhofstrasse, pausing periodically to collect huddled white clumps of passengers waiting patiently at the stations. The view from the windows of Hawk's suite gave onto the city. The spires and many bridges over the river made the scene a wonder for him. He took the elevator down and met Congreve in the lobby of their hotel. It was one of the oldest establishments in Zurich, built amid gardens at the edge of the lake, and quite the nicest hotel in town. Blinky had made a reservation for 4 at a restaurant called Der Kronenhal. Hawk looked at his watch, saw it wasn't yet 6 o'clock, and suggested they have a quick drink in the cozy hotel bar before adjourning to the restaurant. "Quite an exciting and informative day," Alex said, after they'd ordered from the barman. They'd managed to snag the last 2 spots left at the heavily carved mahogany bar. A buoyant hum of conversation was audible over the happy tinkling of ice cubes and crystal glasses. A very civilized Friday night in one of Europe's most beautiful capitals.
"Exhilarating up there, wasn't it?" Ambrose said, casting a glance at an extraordinarily beautiful ash blonde who'd just entered the room and was glancing their way.
She was resplendent in a gray and red Chanel suit, loops of white pearls around her neck, and hair sculpted into a chignon held by a diamond pin.
"Rather exhilarating in here, too," Hawk said, watching her every move through the crowded bar before she found a small table alone in the corner.
She found his eyes again, and hers lingered on his a moment too long. Hawk added, "I'm sorry. What did you say, Ambrose?"
"I didn't say anything. I'm speechless.
Good heavens. That's a work of art. I don't suppose she's staying here, do you? She wasn't wearing the mink on her arm when she came in.
Oh, come on, Alex. Don't even get started with that foolishness.
Foolishness? Are you quite mad? I'm a free man, you know.
Over 21. Drink or drink and mind your own business and don't embarrass yourself any farther. And close your mouth. It's hanging open.
Hawk reluctantly swiveled back to face the long mirrored wall behind the bar and changed the subject.
Let's talk about Wolfie. I find him a bit of a gent, don't you? A bit over the top, but in a good way. Looks like we'll be working with him. He grew on me after a while, in a good way, of course, but still, something not quite. Don't listen to me. I'm being too harsh on him.
Well, fancies himself a gentleman warrior of the first stripe.
Still, we could do a hell of a lot worse, Hawk said. I saw you speaking briefly about one of his men finding the murder victim in the snow. Anything interesting?
Well, very odd. The whole thing is interesting, Congreve said. The victim's head was found by a Lieutenant Hartz, one of von Stuttgart's grenadiers, while he was on the mountain engaged in a search and rescue last week. The man thought he'd found a decapitated head frozen on top of a snowbank at around 8,000 feet, frozen stiff. Oddly enough, a pair of horn-rimmed glasses were stuck in the snow, not a foot from his head. No tracks, no sign of foul play. They finally found a corpse connected to the head and dug it out. Chap seems to have suddenly appeared there, out of the blue.
It happens, Hawk said.
Of course it does, but does this happen? The victim was a good-looking, well-dressed, mustachioed man in his late 40s. At the instant of his high-altitude fall, our doomed alpinist was wearing a three-piece hardy aim suit with an Hermes tie and a pair of lob chestnut brogues. Does that happen often in these Alps?
Buck was astonished.
Possible. He would have been in mountain gear, the full rig, oxygen, etc.
I quite agree. I've turned it over and over in the nerve center and they've come up empty. Anything occurred to you? Anything even plausible?
Hawk paused a moment to consider.
Just one. The victim was thrown out of an open helicopter, flying above the Alps.
Oh, please spare me. I've already considered that. Do you really think a passenger in an open helo, flying over the highest mountains in the world in the dead of winter, with temperatures hovering around 0 degrees centigrade, would have been dressed in a chalk-striped Savile Row suit and wearing a pair of $1,000 lace-up brogues from Loeb of Piccadilly?
Good point. My specialty.
Well, fine. You're the murder specialist. So how do you think he got there?
Just dropped in after a day of shopping in London.
Spare me. Okay. He was killed elsewhere, and the corpse was carried up there to a very remote location to be disposed of.
Possible, but nonsensical.
Not even remotely sensible.
Right. Well, you hire a boat. You fit him with a pair of cement shoes. You throw him overboard in the middle of Lake Zurich at midnight. And what is your second brilliant possibility?
I have no earthly idea, nor do I think that even my hero Holmes would have one. Not early in this case, at any rate.
There's obviously some kind of explanation.
Of course there is. That's why we're here, dear boy.
No, that's why you're here. You're the brains of the outfit. I'm the intrepid mountain climber, remember?
Good point, Alex.
And what would your intrepid hero surmise based on the statement you just made?
Well, I don't know. Ambrose, you tell me.
That mountain climbing will obviously be required to solve this very puzzling mystery.
She's looking this way again. I think she's extremely lonely.
Do you think I might stroll over there and offer my services?
No, I certainly do not. Baron von Stuttgart and Blinky are waiting for us at the restaurant.
Be right back, Hawk said, over his shoulder.
Chapter 12. Hawk, Congreve, and Alex's brand new friend, the newly minted vice president at Credit Suisse named Sigrid Kissel, were a little late when they arrived at the restaurant. Von Stuttgart and Blinky were already at the table on their second vodka martinis. Der Kronenhalle was a go-to spot in Zurich for both Baron von Stuttgart and Herr Schulz. In this century-old city, very restaurants had more to offer. On the walls hung paintings by Picasso, Chagall,
Matisse, Miro, and Clay. It had been a gathering place for artists and poets from all over Europe who had sought refuge from the Nazis during World War II. And the food was remarkable, too. The Baron, resplendent in an exquisitely tailored navy blue blazer and grenadier's regimental tie, got to his feet, smiling broadly, as the newcomers approached the table through a throng of diners.
"Alex! Ambrose! Over here!" he called out. "Oh, good evening, Wolfie. Brinky," Ambrose said, first to pull out his chair and sit down. "Sorry we're late, I'm afraid. Alex was unavoidably detained at the last minute, and my apologies. Baron, may I introduce Miss Kissel?"
"How do you do, my dear Sigrid?" Wolfie said, offering the exquisitely beautiful woman his hand. "We have met before, I believe."
"I'm sorry, Baron. You have me at a disadvantage."
"You are Fräulein Sigrid Kissel, I believe, from a Credit Suisse. I am Baron von Stuttgart."
"Oh, yes, Baron von Stuttgart," Sigrid said, turning a bit pink. "Of course, now I remember. At the Credit Suisse corporate office, you were having coffee with our chairman last month, were you not?"
"Yes, yes, my dear. We had coffee in the CEO's office, my dear friend Dr. Heinrich Steele's office, that right? Is it not? He tells me you are his most trusted bank officer."
"Ah, but in fact I was only taking notes for Dr. Shield that morning, Baron. Still, I'm very pleased that you remember me."
"Well, my dear, you are a very memorable woman in every way, if I may say so."
Hawk, like a warring stag, sensing the unexpected heat of battle, was swift to join the fray.
"I hadn't noticed that lovely ring you were wearing, Sigrid. Ruby, is it?" she said.
"A red sapphire. Quite rare."
"Stunning. Who gave it to you?"
"Just a friend."
"Ah, someone who must have strong feelings."
"Oh, he does," she said, glancing across the table. Hawk maintained his fixed smile.
"Now look here, Wolfie, our guests have arrived,"
Blinky said, quickly filling the awkward moment.
"Let's order more drinks, shall we?"
Hawk took his chair and said, "Sigrid tells me she has been promoted since then, Baron. She's now one of the bank's VPs, handling some of the UK's investment portfolios, among others."
"How coincidental," the Baron replied, deliberately vague. "Quick, everyone order drinks and let's take a look at the menu. I have an urgent call to take, but I shall be right back.
Sigrid, dear, you've met Chief Inspector Congreve, have you not?"
"Oh, yes, we all met at the hotel just an hour ago."
"Collins whiskey for me," Ambrose said to the hovering waiter. "And neat rum for Mr. Hawk. Sigrid, what would you like?"
"A glass of Pinot Gris, please. The Hellfish, 2008, if you have it."
When the drinks came, they all raised their glasses, clinked, and said, "Prost."
"Please don't touch that wine," Congreve said, catching her as she raised the glass to her lips.
"Why not?" she said, alarmed.
"It's turned. Let me order another vintage for you. Sorry, I have a highly attuned and sensitive nose, you see, one of my many weapons and weaknesses."
While Ambrose summoned the wine steward, Blinky said,
"Thank you for joining us, Fräulein Kissel. We were just discussing a topic that you may have read about in Neue Azure Zeitunglasse. The discovery of a corpse at the base of Der Nadel."
"Yeah?"
She sipped her water and replied, "Apparently he might have been a banker. One of ours, even. Just office gossip at this point."
Congreve, Hawk, and Schultz stared at each other in astonishment.
"Are you joking?" Blinky said. "A banker? We've heard nothing about any bankers."
"Well, you wouldn't have. I only learned of this a few hours ago before I left my office. Our bank's director of human resources was on the floor, speaking with a group of our senior managers, and I happened to overhear. The director said that one of our senior bank employees had recently traveled to London on holiday."
"Sorry to interrupt, Fräulein Kissel," Ambrose said, smiling at Hawk.
"Recently traveled to London, Eddie?"
"Yes."
"I suspected as much. Please go on."
Wolfie looked at his watch and said, "I have an urgent call to make, but I shall be right back."
After he'd left, Sigrid said, "I knew him rather well. His name is Leo Herrmann. Quite good-looking, actually. He was supposed to be back at work this morning, but he never showed up.
Calls to his apartment went unreturned, as well as calls from his parents who knew nothing about his whereabouts. They've not heard from him all week, his mother said. Not that it's him, of course, but still. Fascinating, Hawke said. And by the way, what was this chap's name again, Singrid? Leo Herman, did you say?